Mayor Booker's tough election fight marked one of the many generational transitions in black leadership. But besides the issue of passing the torch, there's also the question of how you judge leadership and make sure you and your community get what you deserve. With us today, we've got Ron Walters. He's a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland. He's also the author of Freedom is Not Enough, Black Voters, Black Candidates, and American Presidential Politics. Plus, we've got Sherrilyn Ifill. She is a civil rights lawyer and law professor, also at the University of Maryland at the School of Law. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, Troy.
So, you know, there are 39 million African Americans, and we certainly don't have the same thoughts, desires, agendas, but some folks complain about people who've got the spotlight, whether it's the Congressional Black Caucus, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, the NAACP. Ron, what do you think most people want, or many people want, in terms of leadership that affects the black community? I won't say black leaders, because, you know, that's maybe too much of an umbrella term.
Well, right. I spend a lot of my time not only with leaders, but also studying African-American leadership. I have a center at the University of Maryland dedicated to that. And I conclude that, first of all, let me argue a little bit with you about the term post-civil rights. I don't believe we're in a post-civil rights era. We are in the era of where we had a mass civil rights movement, and we are not in that era anymore. But certainly the problems of civil rights are still very much with us, and the problem of social justice is still one that requires the attention of the kind of leaders that that you mentioned. Part of the problem we have is that they shake up the peace, they disturb the peace, and so we're always sort of asking the question of, do we need these kind of leaders? We are in a second generation, a third generation of leaders, and to tell you the truth, although there is generational change, without question, I really don't see a lot of difference either in the style in which they're approaching problems or the content of the problems, because so much of what they are dealing with at the local level is systemic and goes right up to the national level. So these cities are in bad shape. A lot of the problems that are created go right back to the conservative administration in Washington that has been withdrawing resources for now 30 years. And so the mayors of these cities, no matter whether they're post-generation or not, have the same problems that we had 30 years ago.
Sherrilyn, even if these folks have some of the same problems, do they really have the same style? People like Cory Booker were seen positively and negatively as having a very different style from, say, Sharp James.
I think, actually, Farai, that we are seeing something different in this generation. And I think this, although many of the problems that this generation of leaders has to grapple with are the same, many of them are different because there's been some cultural transformation in America that's changed the lexicon in terms of the way we talk about race and racism, because the economic conditions in this country are the way they are. And so I think some of the problems are different in some ways than were dealt with in the past. But what marks, I think, the new generation for our three things. One is that, you know, they're fundamentally unafraid of and completely connected to the idea of using media, using the Internet, using music, you know, connected to the hip-hop generation and so forth, that I think actually makes a difference. Because what most people really want is someone who can articulate their concerns with all of the nuances that go along with it. And the reality is the interests of black people are really very complicated. They're not simplistic. They're not monolithic. And in some ways, for shorthand purposes, you know, traditional leaders have had to talk about those problems in those ways. But I think this new generation of leaders, they understand how to use media. They're unafraid of it. They're willing to speak in nuance, and they can be heard in that way. Many of them are also very unafraid of dealing with the money world. They understand the corporate world. Some of them are coming from foundations like Benjamin Jealous or others who are connected with that world, and so they understand that world of philanthropy and the people who work in that world. That's a very different connection that they're starting out with on the ground. And they're fundamentally optimistic. I mean, they're the children of some of the benefits of the civil rights movement. They've grown up primarily middle class, but close enough usually to working class people in neighborhoods to understand those problems. But they're optimistic about what America can do. And so I actually do think we're in a moment in which the leadership looks different. Many of the problems are the same, But I think that the approach and the style, not just the style, but really the approach of these new leaders is going to be different than the traditional civil rights leaders that we're accustomed to.
Ron, let me move to the question of accountability. I'm going to toss to you the worst case scenario. What happens when you have a leader that's not living up to citizens' expectations? For example, a lot of people think that's the case with Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. Of course, you can vote folks out, but there are not elections all the time. What do you do as a citizen if you feel like you're not being well served?
Well, I think that accountability is the name of that game. And citizens, too often, I think, in the black community, have sort of elected someone to office and then gone home and sat down. They have a continuing responsibility to be a part of accountability organizations, whether it's civil rights organizations, and again, that's where they come in on the local level. The NAACPs of the world and many of those are very active in trying to make local government accountable. And so that's where I think that you, and if you're talking about Detroit, that is, I think, a precise example, because the city council in Detroit has dealt with this situation, or is dealing with it, not only trying to pressure the mayor to step down, but also calling on the governor to take him out of office. So there is a level of accountability there in the city, right at the local level, and that's where the rubber meets the road.
Sherilyn, how do you begin to assess leadership? I mean, it doesn't have to be a situation where things are going wrong. When you see things happening for good or bad, how do you really make a decision as a citizen about, you know, what you should do, how you should communicate with government? I mean, there are people who write letters all the time. There are people who don't even vote. What are the spectrum of responses, for example, that you can offer in helping to shape leadership?
Well, I think what people want are two things. One, they want the material conditions on the ground to be changed. The most successful elected officials, you know, are those who respond to the person who writes about the pothole on their street. And so people want that sense of connection and that sense of immediate accountability. You know, actually, accountability writ large in terms of substantive structural change is important and has to be monitored. But the individual really wants to see material change in their lives. They want to know that when they send their child to school next September, things are different and better than they were last year. So that's the first place, is that people really monitor what happens on the ground. And the second thing, I think, is that people really want to hear leaders with new ideas. I think this is a time for that, and people are very much interested, and I think actually the electorate is a lot more cynical in many ways than it used to be, and some of that is the result of the 24-hour news cycle. And so people really want to hear someone talking in different ways and doing things in different ways. And interestingly enough, it's a very exciting moment, because I think many voters are willing to give elected officials, particularly non-traditional elected officials, younger African Americans and so forth, a chance to do things a little bit differently. But, you know, once you're given that chance, you really have to come through. And that's where the accountability piece comes in, because people want to know that if you say you're going to do something different, you know, I'm willing to go with you, but you got to really make it feel different. So it's really about the electorate continuing to monitor those new officials to make sure that they're doing the job that they're supposed to do, and being unafraid of your own power as a voter, which I think is really a problem. You know, knowing that you do have the power to get people out of office, that you do have the power yourself to form your own political clubs and your own political activist groups to really affect the process in your local community.
Ron, what about connecting people between local communities? I mean, education, for example, is something that is a concern to people from neighborhood to neighborhood, rural, urban, et cetera. And you know, how do you form coalitions that, I mean, some traditional organizations and new organizations do that, but are there any other ways to kind of reach out to people in other locations?
Well, I think that here's where many of our national organizations are. I think that Ben Jealous, who is a very good friend of mine, will take, I think, what he had known about the media and use it to do precisely that. That is to link up organizations around the country in sort of a coalition formation, coalitions that he's worked with for many years. So I think that that's certainly important. I agree with Gwen Ifill about, Sherilyn, I'm sorry, about, I know, not Gwen Ifill, but Sherilyn, about this issue of the Internet. I mean, I think that is, when you look at many of the Internet sites and the way in which they operate, they're perfect vehicles for sort of bidding people into the new forms of social and political organization. And that's a powerful tool that some of the new leaders are using, and even some of the old leaders are forced to use it. So that's sort of something that I think we see. We see it in Barack Obama's, for example, fundraising mechanisms. We see it all around us, and I think that it's something that if you're going to do social justice organizing today, you simply have to learn how to use.
All right. Well, Ron, Sherilyn, thank you.
Thank you.
Ron Walters is a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland. He is also the author of Freedom is Not Enough, Black Voters, Black Candidates, and American Presidential Politics, plus Sherilyn Eiffel, a civil rights lawyer and law professor at the University of Maryland School of Law.